RCR with Paul Brennan.
Time for another health hacks here at RCR, this time harnessing the power of your mind to transform your health, well-being and life. And joining us is advanced clinical hypnotherapist, rapid transformational therapist and youth coach at Inspired Hypnosis in Whanganui, Azian Zulkifli. Thank you for joining us, Azian, and coming on Health Hacks.
Hi, Paul. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really passionate about this topic, so thanks for having me.
Yeah, I think a lot more people are of sort of recent making, let me put it that way. Do you think I'm right?
Yeah, I believe that over the years, hypnotherapy has become more accepted as a actual therapeutic tool, certainly.
Okay. I have not much knowledge of hypnotherapy, hypnosis or anything. I've been to a few entertainment shows years ago. They were very entertaining. What you can get people to do over and over again, actually, under the in a state of hypnosis is quite entertaining and amazing. I want to ask just with a basic question, or start with a basic question. What happens to a person when they're under hypnosis? What's going on?
All right, so through suggestions and the deep relaxation, we're putting a person into like an artificial state of trance. And in trance, it's essentially a focused state of attention. So we're focusing inwards. The person is usually semi-conscious. They can remember what happens and they can hear everything. So most people can remember what happened during a hypnotherapy session.
Are they in control of what they're doing ultimately?
Ultimately, I would say yes, because either the person is willing to accept the suggestion or they are not. So if I say, take a deep breath and relax as you're breathing out, it's entirely up to my client if they want to do that or not.
Okay, so when going back to those shows I mentioned, people are running around putting items of clothing on over the top of the last item they put on over and over again. They're kind of willing participants. If they didn't want to do that, something would stop them.
Absolutely. We say that the people make up their mind when they buy the ticket. Either they are keen and think, oh, that might be fun going on stage, I want to give it a go. Or people like me would be like, you're never going to get me on that stage.
No, I thought about giving it a go. I wonder how susceptible are, you know, different sort of individual personalities, whatever, how susceptible to, well, susceptible is possibly the wrong word, but how easily can they be hypnotized?
That varies greatly, Paul. There's definitely people that are way more susceptible or suggestible to all sorts of things. And then there are people that are stronger willed, that are maybe also more aware and conscious of what is being said to them. And so I would say, yeah, it ranges from the people that usually go on a hypnotherapy, a hypnosis stage show, are the most suggestible. They love doing that. They want to take those suggestions, right? They want to be involved. And then you also have the peer pressure of the whole room. That you can't underestimate that in a show. Yeah.
Do you think it's fair to say that mainstream media junkies are probably the easiest to hypnotize?
Well, it's called a program for a reason.
Yeah. Okay, I'll take that as maybe. Okay, in terms of transforming oneself, how deep are you talking there? Like right to the core? Because hypnosis is more about what's going on subconsciously, isn't it? It's not directly connected to, well, maybe it is, you'll tell me, you know, physical organs or areas of the body that might be giving trouble.
No, but there's definitely an element of mind over matter, right? So whatever the mind holds, the beliefs, the patterns that we're holding, things we picked up in youth during our formative years will greatly influence our physical health and well-being. So, for example, if a person, you know, believes, oh, I've got a terrible memory, and they repeat that to themselves over and over, and literally a belief is nothing than something that we repeat to ourselves again and again. So if we say, I've got a shocking memory and repeat that, that's what our subconscious mind is going to strive to provide.
Okay, how easy is it to unwind then? You know, someone who's told themselves, like you say, I've got a bad memory, I can't remember anything, or I'm bad at math. It turns out if you probably gave it a go, you're not too bad at it at all. To unbundle that, what sort of process is that?
I believe, first and foremost, there has to be a willingness to make a change. Yeah, that's the beginning. The person needs to want, they see there's an issue, I can do better, and I want to do something about it. Yeah. And then it depends. People are, you know, some people change more quickly than other people. Some people take more repetition and take a bit longer. So it's very individual how fast that transformation can be. But essentially, I would say anyone who wants to change definitely can change.
There does seem to be in the culture a kind of amplifying of, well, a sense of senses of anxiety, meaninglessness. Some might say, I got a job, but what does it mean? And, you know, only get the weekends, and is this what life is all about? It seems that the culture has, I go back a few decades now, has just in the last maybe decade or two really started amplifying that sort of thinking in people where it wasn't there really before. Though after a Second World War, I guess you want to relax. But and that's the span I'm thinking of, the people I know. The culture is kind of attacking people in a way, in that way, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. Everything we've been through in the last 5 years has certainly heightened the general level of anxiety in our society. We've been, as you know, exposed to a lot of fear-mongering and things from the mainstream media. And that has affected everybody's emotional well-being. Yeah.
Who's suffering generationally?
I believe young people are suffering tremendously from that. I think the whole social media pressure that is now on them, I'm so glad we didn't have that when I was young. Yeah. Scary.
Yeah, though you kind of can manage those things as well. And I suppose, you know, people wanting to shut down or cancel people is one way of doing it. But anyway, it is what it is. Is there a gender aspect to issues?
I think maybe lack of confidence, I would say. Yeah, that's hard to say, but maybe that girls, young girls, teenage girls struggle maybe a little bit more with it, but then they probably just express it in different ways. I think confidence is an issue generally for young people, and it will probably affect both, but maybe how it is expressed in their lives might be slightly different.
So how do you go, I asked you about unbundling this just before, but specifically, how do you go, what is the process? You don't need to give away too much of your IP, but what is the process of getting to the nub of an issue in this way? How do you dig down and get to the bottom of it?
So when I meet with a new client, we always have a discovery session first, and we discuss what the issue is. What do they recognize as their problem? Where are they struggling in their life? What has happened that has led to where they are? And then based on that, I have various tools. I call them my little mind toolbox. And then I can see the pattern. So say if we're dealing with anxiety, that is different than if somebody holds trauma, maybe from childhood, right? So I will use those tools accordingly to what the pattern is that presents itself. A really easy one to explain is sometimes people hold conflicting thoughts, right? So you have a New Year's resolution, you want to go to the gym 5 times a week, but really the habit, the pattern that's underlying is you come home from work, all you want to do is sit on the couch and watch TV. So we have a conscious part that says, no, I want to change that pattern, but we have the underlying habit that keeps undoing it because there is already an established pattern. So what I do is I help them first, obviously, identifying the patterns. And then I have tools so that we can then start to change those patterns to something that suits them better for a healthier future.
I'm thinking of, you know, like the kind of inner voice thing. So people know what they need to do. They know at some level, or maybe they don't. You might tell me different. But there's a whole lot of processes. There's trauma moments in their life, a whole lot of things that kind of overrides the primary knowingness, does it?
So if you would imagine the mind like an iceberg, right? So you've got the conscious mind at the top above the water, and then you've got the vast part is below the water. And that's where all our old memories, long-term memories, our emotions, our feelings, creativity is down there, intuition. So there's a lot of stuff that's in the subconscious mind. And so through relaxation, through a guided relaxation, you can access those parts. So when we make a decision, a conscious decision, we're in the conscious part, right? But when we want to go and change those patterns, we need to access the subconscious mind. And that's how hypnosis works. So essentially, you, through deep relaxation and through suggestions, you're going to access those particular parts in the mind, and then you can make changes to those. And what I find really fascinating is that we perceive time as a linear thing, right? It starts at one end, we're born, and then it's just our life continues on a line. But in hypnosis, you can actually access different times. So you can go back into the past. And although you cannot change the events as such, you can change the interpretation and the feelings around the event. And that will create lasting change. So if there was someone that was really severely traumatized because they witnessed maybe a terrible accident or they were in the accident. So trauma is something that wasn't processed properly because at the time, the person didn't have the safety and the support they needed. So trauma, so therefore, not everything is necessarily trauma. So people can experience the same thing, but one person had the support and was made to feel safe. And it will not remain trauma. It was just a really bad experience. Whereas the other person that was left to struggle, it will then manifest as trauma later. So in hypnosis, we can go back and we can make this person feel safe based on what they know later as they are older, and then realize that was a bad experience, but it doesn't have to define me. Yeah. So it's very powerful.
Are you saying that we're basically recording everything we do? And that it is accessible to what sort of, I'm just curious, to what sort of level of accuracy when you really get to this level? How accurate is the recall?
Well, you know, that's hard to say. There's obviously always personal interpretation. There is the stage and the age of the person when they experience something. Right. So I find below the age of 3, usually memories are stored in the body rather than as images or concepts or words. Yeah. Usually the first few years, because the child doesn't have the concept yet of, you know, words and expressions and certain concepts. So it's all stored in the body. A lot of the first memories that we make is somewhere stored in the body.
Yeah, okay, but we are recording things. Memory's one thing, but what I was envisaging was some kind of data recording that is way more precise, but maybe not very accessible, and I was just curious, that, you know, how much detail do we record in our memory?
That's very individual, and there's definitely various ways how you can visualize how your memory is stored. And it's interesting because one of my daughters uses like a shelving system. And if she needs information, she goes to a particular shelf and she takes out
like a filing system.
Yeah, totally. And I thought that was fascinating. I don't have that. But, you know, so in hypnosis, we use similar tools. So, for example, there's a whole of memory that I frequently use in one of my guided meditations or guided, you know, shifts. And people can go and essentially pick things that have left a negative emotional charge and then go and cleanse it. So there's various ways of how you can use visualization to make actually lasting emotional shifts.
How did you get interested in this?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I've been, I carried some trauma from my childhood and youth. And so I wasn't the happiest of teenagers, so I've suffered from anxiety and depression and all that. And although in my 20s I made some quite significant changes and I've done a lot of therapy over the years, but it came back after my last daughter was born. Struggled with depression again and just generally, like you said, that feeling of what's the purpose of life? And so I went to go back and really look what is out there. There's got to be somewhere out there, you know, something that can help me personally make a change. And that's when I discovered hypnotherapy. And it just transformed honestly, it was a recorded session. It wasn't even a live session. And it just transformed how I saw myself. And it gave me a completely different understanding of my role in the world.
Wow. Okay. And does it have, I mean, is it a cure? Use that word. Can people be cured, or does it require sort of maintenance ongoing, or can you cure yourself of these things?
Of everything. Well, you know, I mean, people obviously are works in progress, right? Life isn't static. Things change. Situations change. There's always issues that we have and challenges that we're presented with. But I would say that some really of the deep, so some of my deep trauma that I held for decades was really released in one session. And that was wow. My childhood trauma.
Well, that must have been incredible. Like a load coming off, right?
Oh, yeah, I was sobbing.
Yeah, don't forget that. Yes.
But it was great. I felt completely different the next day, and it didn't go back. So that was the basis, right. And I realized that's what I want to do. I want to be able to help people deal with that stuff.
Okay. You mentioned the age of three just before. I'm just curious now, at what age is the youngest and at what age is the oldest human that you've... Oh, here's a question. Can you hypnotize animals?
Oh, hey, I don't know, but I've seen videos where they hypnotize chickens with they draw like a circle, and the chicken seems to be following it. And when you make a line out, it does something to the chicken's brain, and they go like in a, they kind of collapse into like a heap. But now I don't know if that works.
No, just came to me that question. In terms of youngest and oldest, you've hypnotized. Yes. What are those ages?
Yeah, so I do like working with young people. The youngest that I've worked with is 10. I do feel they need a certain maturity, okay? They have to be able to understand the suggestions I'm giving them. Of course, I make them age-appropriate and, you know, easy to follow. Like I said, 10 was the youngest. That was a relatively mature young boy that I worked with around anxiety, and there was some trauma there. The oldest person would have probably been in their 80s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's a whole life crammed in there waiting to jump out, I would imagine.
Yes. I would say I would prefer working with younger people because, you know, although I do work with people later in life, they would have had carried some of their patterns and habits for a very long time. Usually by then the health can be in quite a bad state. So I often work with people in their 60s with now they maybe await surgery. They have to lose weight for that, right? So they had a long time of bad habits, and it's not as easy to undo at that point than if you never even really start with a bad habit. Yeah. So I prefer to work with teenagers and people in their 20s, because once they understand their mind, how powerful it is, and that if they program it the right way, they can be really successful in life.
You're doing other things in the Whanganui community. I'm curious about Unity Food. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. Unity Food came out of the second lockdown. We recognized that there was an issue with the homeless. Obviously, there was people struggling with access to food. And so we created Unity Food in October 21. And yeah, been doing that for the last, while. Mm-hmm. So we feed people every Friday. I've got a team of amazing volunteers. There's about 15 of us. Most of our food is donated either by organizations or individuals. And so every Friday afternoon, we give out food, and on average, we feed 150 to 200 people every week, and we help them get through the weekend because we feel people are entitled to relax on the weekend, and they shouldn't be worrying, you know, what am I going to feed my children on Sunday morning?
Must be some amazing moments doing that, because I imagine for some, you know, being able to get anything to help, but food especially, would be quite a thing for them.
Yeah. And it's been great. You know, we get asked a lot of times, aren't people, you know, abusing the service, taking advantage of it? And we haven't found that at all. Generally, people really only take what they need. They only come when they're really struggling. So a lot of people don't come all the time. But for others, it has become their only little social outing during the week. So we offer them a cup of tea while they're waiting, and a light lunch as well. And so there's a group of people that come and just hang out.
It's an issue at the moment. Should we be providing school lunches, do you think?
Oh.
To guarantee a certain nutrition level?
No, I believe actually taking a page out of Japan's schools, I believe the children should be involved both in making their own school lunches. It would teach them some really good life skills. They should be involved in growing their own food, and they should also be involved in actually cleaning and keeping their school tidy. That's my
There you
personal
go.
opinion.
All right, back to the original part of the chat. For those interested, I think you said that you had a recorded session was the one that you had. I presume that's not with a live person, but following instructions along with something.
No.
Yeah. So people can do that. But if they want to go further, what do you recommend? Getting in touch with you would be one thing. How would they go about that?
Yeah, so I've got a website. It's www.inspired-hypnosis.co.nz. And you can either email me there or you can book a discovery session. Generally, yeah, there's a lot of guided meditations and things on YouTube. Of course, you can use those, but if you would like a bit more an individual program and really accessing, the issues that you're struggling with, yeah, get in touch. And I can, there's great hypnotherapists all over New Zealand.
All right. Azian Zulkifli, who is an advanced clinical hypnotherapist, rapid transformational therapist, and youth coach at Inspired Hypnosis in Whanganui. Thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge on this. It's been really interesting chatting with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. And to everyone listening, I hope it has sparked some inspiration about how powerful your mind is. And the thoughts we entertain really shape our reality and our future. And as Mahatma Gandhi said, a man is but the product of his thoughts. What he thinks, he becomes. So please give it some thought. How can you change your thinking and your beliefs so that they create the future that you want to have?
Nicely said. And do you click your finger at the end of it like a hypnotherapist to wake
Oh,
us up again?
occasionally it depends. Depends on what session I'm doing with people. Yeah.
Right. Or you
So,
just wake
wake
up.
up. No, usually I say, and when you're ready, you can open your eyes.